If I stopped going to work, my boss would have no trouble finding someone to replace me. I am needed only for the unskilled labour I provide, and it doesn't actually matter at all if it is I who is working there or someone else, or a machine for that matter. No one is requiring this me in particular. In such circumstances, would you have confidence in yourself? Would you be able to have a true sense of worth? Philosopher. From an Adlerian psychology point of view, the answer is simple. First of all, build a horizontal relationship between yourself and another person. One is enough. Let's start from there. Youth. Please don't treat me like a fool. Look, I have friends, and I am building solid horizontal relationships with them. Philosopher. Even so, I suspect that with your parents and your boss and with your junior colleagues and other people as well, the relationships you are building are vertical ones. Youth. Of course, I have different kinds of relationships. That's how it is for everyone. This is a very important point. Does one build vertical relationships or does one build horizontal relationships? This is an issue of lifestyle, and human beings are not so clever as to be able to have different lifestyles available whenever the need arises. In other words, deciding that one is equal to this person or in a hierarchical relationship with that person does not work. Youth. Do you mean that one has to choose one or the other, vertical relationships or horizontal relationships? Absolutely yes. If you are building even one vertical relationship with someone, before you even notice what is happening, you will be treating all your interpersonal relations as vertical. So I am treating even my relationships with my friends as vertical? That is correct. Even if you are not treating them in a boss or subordinate kind of way, it is as if you are saying, A is above me and B is below me, for example, or I'll follow A's advice but ignore what B says, or I don't mind breaking my promise to C. On the other hand, if one has managed to build a horizontal relationship with at least one person, if one has been able to build a relationship of equals in the true sense of the term, that is a major lifestyle transformation. With that breakthrough, all one's interpersonal relations will gradually become horizontal. What nonsense! There are so many ways I could refute that. Think of a company setting, for example. It wouldn't really be feasible for the director and his new recruits to form relationships as equals, would it? Hierarchical relationships are part of the system of our society, and to ignore that is to ignore the social order. Look, if you heard that a new recruit at your company, who's only 20 or so, had suddenly started buddying up to the 60-something director, don't you think it would sound pretty far-fetched? Philosopher. It is certainly important to respect one's elders. In a company structure, it is only natural for there to be different levels of responsibility. I am not telling you to make friends with everyone or behave as if you are close friends. Rather, what is important is to be equal in consciousness and to assert that which needs to be asserted. Youth. I am not someone who can mouth off to my seniors, and I would never think of trying. My social common sense would be called into question if I did. What is senior? What is this mouthing off? If one is gauging the atmosphere of a situation and being dependent on vertical relationships, one is engaging in irresponsible acts. One is trying to avoid one's responsibilities. What is irresponsible about it? Suppose that as a result of following your boss's instructions, your work ends in failure. Whose responsibility is it then? Youth. Well, that'd be my boss's responsibility, because I was just following orders, and he was the one who decided on them. None of the responsibility is yours? No, it isn't. It's the responsibility of the boss who gave the orders. This is what's known as organizational accountability. You are wrong. That is a life lie. There is space for you to refuse, and there should also be space to propose a better way of doing things. You are just thinking there is no space to refuse, so that you can avoid the conflict of the associated interpersonal relations and avoid responsibility. And you are being dependent on vertical relationships. Youth. Are you saying I should disobey my boss? Sure, in theory I should. Theoretically, it's exactly as you say. But I can't do that. There's no way I could build a relationship like that. Really? You are building a horizontal relationship with me right now. You are asserting yourself very well. Instead of thinking about this or that difficulty, you can just start here. I can start here? Yes, in this small study. As I told you earlier, to me, you are an irreplaceable friend. Am I wrong? I appreciate it, I really do, but I'm afraid. I'm afraid of accepting your proposal. What are you afraid of exactly? The tasks of friendship, naturally. I have never befriended an older man like you. I have no idea if a friend relationship with such a difference in age is even possible, or if I had better think of it as a student-teacher relationship. Age does not matter in love and friendship. It is certainly true that the tasks of friendship require a steady courage. With regard to your relationship with me, it will be fine to reduce the distance little by little, to a degree of distance in which we are not in very close contact, but can still reach out and touch each other's faces with our outstretched arms, so to speak. Youth. Please give me some time. Just once more, I would like some time to try to figure things out on my own. Our discussion today has given me much to think about. I would like to take it all home and ruminate on it calmly on my own. Philosopher. It takes time to gain a true understanding of community feeling. It would be quite impossible to understand everything about it right here and now. Please return to your home and give it some careful thought, while checking it against everything else we have discussed. Youth. I will. In any case, it was quite a blow to be told that I never really look at others, and I only have concern for myself. You're really a dreadful fellow. Ha ha! You say it in such a happy way. Yes, I enjoy it immensely. It hurts, of course. It's like a sharp pain that shoots through me, as if I were swallowing needles. But still, I enjoy it immensely. It's habit-forming, having these discussions with you. I realized a little while ago that maybe I don't just want to take apart your argument. I want you to take apart mine, too. I see. That's an interesting analysis. Youth. But don't forget, I told you that I am going to take apart your argument and bring you to your knees, and I haven't given up. Philosopher. Thank you. I've had a good time, too. Come by whenever you're ready to pick this back up. The Fifth Night. To live in earnest in the here and now. The young man thought to himself, Adlerian psychology is engaged in a thorough inquiry into interpersonal relationships, and the final goal of these interpersonal relationships is community feeling. But is this really enough? Isn't there something else that I was brought into this world to achieve? What is the meaning of life? Where am I headed? And what sort of life am I trying to lead? The more the young man thought, the more it seemed to him that his own existence had been tiny and insignificant. Excessive self-consciousness stifles the self. Philosopher. It's been a while, hasn't it? Youth. Yes, I last came about a month ago. I've been thinking about the meaning of community feeling since then. So, how do you feel about it now? Well, community feeling is definitely an attractive idea, the sense of belonging, that it's okay to be here, for example, which we possess as a fundamental desire, I think it is a brilliant insight into our existence as social creatures. It's a brilliant insight, except... Funny, you caught on right away. That's right. I still have some issues with it. I'll say it straight out. I have no idea what you're going on about with your references to the universe and all that, and it ends up reeking of religion from beginning to end. There's this kind of cultish quality to it all that I just can't shake. Philosopher. When Adler first proposed the concept of community feeling, there was a great deal of opposition in a similar vein. People said that psychology is supposed to be a science, and here was Adler discussing the issue of worth. That sort of thing isn't science, they said. Youth. So, in my own way, I tried to figure out why I couldn't understand what you were talking about, and I'm thinking that the order of things might be the problem. You're starting off with the universe and inanimate objects, and the past and the future and so on, so I lose track of things. Instead, one should get a firm grasp of the I. Next, one should contemplate one-on-one relationships, that is to say, the interpersonal relationships of you and I, and once one has done that, the larger community should come into view. Philosopher. I see. That is a good order. Youth. Now, the first thing I want to ask about is attachment to self. You are saying that one has to stop being attached to the I and make the switch to concern for others. I am sure it is exactly as you say, concern for others is important. I agree. But no matter what, we worry about ourselves. We look at ourselves all the time. Philosopher. Have you thought about why we worry about ourselves? I have. If I were a narcissist, for example, if I were in love with myself and constantly fascinated with myself, maybe that would simplify things, because your instruction, have more concern for others, is a perfectly sound one. But I am not a self-loving narcissist. I am a self-loathing realist. I hate who I am, and that's exactly why I look at myself all the time. I don't have confidence in myself, and that's why I am excessively self-conscious. Philosopher. At what times do you feel that you are excessively self-conscious? Youth. Well, at meetings, for example, I have a hard time raising my hand and making myself heard. I think needless things, like, if I ask this question, they'll probably laugh at me, or if the point I want to make is irrelevant, I'll get ridiculed and so on, and I just clam up. Truthfully, I falter even when it comes to telling silly jokes in front of people. Every time my self-consciousness kicks in and puts the brakes on, and it's as if I've been straitjacketed. My self-consciousness won't allow me to behave in an innocent way. But I don't even have to ask for your answer. I'm sure it'll be the same as always, have courage. But you know, such words are of no use to me, because this isn't just a matter of courage. Philosopher. I see. Last time, I gave an overview of community feeling. Today we will dig deeper. Youth. And where will that take us? We will probably arrive at the question, what is happiness? Oh, so happiness lies beyond community feeling? There is no need to rush the answers. What we need is dialogue. All right, then. So let's get started. Not self-affirmation, self-acceptance. Philosopher. First of all, let's look at what we were just saying about your self-consciousness putting the brakes on and not letting you behave in an innocent way. There are probably many people who experience this trouble. So, let's go back to the source again and think about your goal. What could you be trying to gain by putting the brakes on your own innocent behavior? Youth. It's the genuine desire to not be laughed at, to not be thought of as a fool. Philosopher. So, in other words, you do not have confidence in your innocent self, in yourself just as you are, right? And you stay away from the kind of interpersonal relationship in which you would just be yourself. But I'll bet that when you're home alone, you sing out loud and dance to music and speak in a lively voice. Ha ha! It's almost like you've set up a surveillance camera in my room. But yes, it's true. I can behave freely when I'm alone. Philosopher. Anyone can behave like a king when they're alone. So this is an issue that should be considered in the context of interpersonal relations. Because it isn't that you don't have an innocent self. It is only that you can't do such things in front of others. Youth. Well, what should I do then? Philosopher. It's about community feeling after all. Concretely speaking, it's making the switch from attachment to self, self-interest, to concern for others, social interest, and gaining a sense of community feeling. Three things are needed at this point: self-acceptance, confidence in others, and contribution to others. Interesting. New keywords, I see. What do they refer to? Philosopher. Let's start with self-acceptance. On our first night, I brought up that statement of Adler's. The important thing is not what one is born with, but what use one makes of that equipment. Do you remember this? Yes, of course. We cannot discard the receptacle that is the I, and neither can we replace it. The important thing, however, is what use one makes of that equipment. One changes one's way of looking at the I. That is to say, one changes how one uses it. Youth. Does that mean be more positive and have a stronger sense of self-affirmation? Think about everything more positively? Philosopher. There is no need to go out of one's way to be positive and affirm oneself. It's not self-affirmation that we are concerned with, but self-acceptance. Not self-affirmation, but self-acceptance. That's right. There is a clear difference. Self-affirmation is making suggestions to oneself, such as, I can do it, or I am strong, even when something is simply beyond one's ability. It is a notion that can bring about a superiority complex, and may even be termed a way of living in which one lies to oneself. With self-acceptance, on the other hand, if one cannot do something, one is simply accepting one's incapable self, as is, and moving forward so that one can do whatever one can. It is not a way of lying to oneself. To put it more simply, say you've got a score of 60%, but you tell yourself, I just happened to get unlucky this time around, and the real me is 100%. That is self-affirmation. By contrast, if one accepts oneself as one is, as 60%, and thinks to oneself, how should I go about getting closer to 100%, that is self-acceptance. Youth. So even if you're only 60%, there's no need to be pessimistic? Of course not. No one is perfect. Do you recall what I said when I was explaining the pursuit of superiority? That all people are in this condition of wanting to improve. Put the other way around, there is no such thing as a 100% person. This is something we should actively acknowledge. Youth. What you are saying sounds positive in various respects, but has a negative ring to it as well. Philosopher. Here I use the term affirmative resignation. Affirmative resignation? This is also the case with the separation of tasks. One ascertains the things one can change and the things one cannot change. One cannot change what one is born with, but one can, under one's own power, go about changing what use one makes of that equipment. So, in that case, one simply has to focus on what one can change rather than on what one cannot. This is what I call self-acceptance. What one can change and what one cannot. That's right. Accept what is irreplaceable. Accept this me just as it is, and have the courage to change what one can change. That is self-acceptance. That reminds me of a line that the writer Kurt Vonnegut quoted in one of his books. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom always to tell the difference. It's in the novel Slaughterhouse-Five. Philosopher. Yes, I know it. It is the serenity prayer. These words are well known and have been transmitted for many years in Christian societies. Youth. He even used the word courage. I read the book so intently I should know it by heart, but I have never noticed this point until now. Philosopher. It's true. We do not lack ability, we just lack courage. It all comes down to courage. The difference between trust and confidence. Youth. There is something about this affirmative resignation that sounds pessimistic. It's just too bleak if the upshot of all this lengthy discussion is resignation. Philosopher. Is that so? Resignation has the connotation of seeing clearly with fortitude and acceptance. Having a firm grasp on the truth of things, that is resignation. There is nothing pessimistic about it. Youth. A firm grasp on the truth. Philosopher. Of course. Just because one has arrived at affirmative resignation as one's self-acceptance, it does not automatically follow that one finds community feeling. That is the reality. When one is switching from attachment to self to concern for others, the second key concept, confidence in others, becomes absolutely essential. Youth. Confidence in others. In other words, believing in others. Here I will consider the words believing in others in the context of distinguishing trust from confidence. First, when we speak of trust, we are referring to something that comes with set conditions. In English, it is referred to as credit. For example, when one wants to borrow money from a bank, one has to have some kind of security. The bank calculates the amount of the loan based on the value of that security and says, "We will lend you this much." The attitude of, "We will lend it to you on the condition that you will pay it back," or, "We will lend you as much as you are able to pay back," is not one of having confidence in someone. It is trust. Youth. Well, that's how bank financing works, I guess. Philosopher. By contrast, from the standpoint of Adlerian psychology, the basis of interpersonal relations is not founded on trust, but on confidence. Youth. And confidence in this case is? It is doing without any set conditions whatsoever when believing in others. Even if one does not have sufficient objective grounds for trusting someone, one believes. One believes unconditionally, without concerning oneself with such things as security. That is confidence. Youth. Believing unconditionally? So it's back to your pet notion of neighbourly love. Of course, if one believes in others without setting any conditions whatsoever, there will be times when one gets taken advantage of. Just like the guarantor of a debt, there are times when one may suffer damages. The attitude of continuing to believe in someone even in such instances is what we call confidence. Youth. Only a naive dimwit would do such a thing. I guess you hold with the doctrine of innate human goodness, while I hold with the doctrine of innate human evilness. Believe unconditionally in complete strangers, and you'll just get used and abused. Philosopher. And there are also times when someone deceives you, and you get used that way. But look at it from the standpoint of someone who has been taken advantage of. There are people who will continue to believe in you unconditionally, even if you are the one who has taken advantage of them. People who will have confidence in you no matter how they are treated. Would you be able to betray such a person again and again? No. Well, it would be. I am sure it would be quite difficult for you to do such a thing. Youth. After all that, are you saying one has to appeal to the emotions? To keep on holding the faith like a saint and act on the conscience of the other person? You're telling me that morals don't matter to Adler, but isn't that exactly what we're talking about here? No, it is not. What would you say is the opposite of confidence? Youth. An antonym of confidence, philosopher. It is doubt. Suppose you have placed doubt at the foundation of your interpersonal relations, that you live your life doubting other people, doubting your friends and even your family and those you love. What sort of relationship could possibly arise from that? The other person will detect the doubt in your eyes in an instant. He or she will have an instinctive understanding that this person does not have confidence in me. Do you think one would be able to build some kind of positive relationship from that point? It is precisely because we lay a foundation of unconditional confidence that it is possible for us to build a deep relationship. Okay, I guess. The way to understand Adlerian psychology is simple. Right now, you are thinking, if I were to have confidence in someone unconditionally, I would just get taken advantage of. However, you are not the one who decides whether or not to take advantage. That is the other person's task. All you need to do is think, what should I do? If you are telling yourself, I'll give it to him if he isn't going to take advantage of me, it is just a relationship of trust that is based on security or conditions. Youth. So one separates tasks there too? Philosopher. Yes. As I have stated repeatedly, carrying out the separation of tasks returns life to an astonishingly simple form. But while the principle of the separation of tasks is easy to grasp, putting it into practice is difficult. I recognize that. Youth. Then you are telling me to keep on having confidence in everyone, to keep on believing in all other people even when they deceive me, and just go on being a naive fool? That's not philosophy or psychology or anything of the sort. It's just the preaching of a zealot. I reject that definitively. Adlerian psychology is not saying have confidence in others unconditionally, on the basis of a moralistic system of values. Unconditional confidence is a means for making your interpersonal relationship with a person better, and for building a horizontal relationship. If you do not have the desire to make your relationship with that person better, then go ahead and sever it, because carrying out the severing is your task. Youth. Then what if I've placed unconditional confidence in a friend in order to make our relationship better? I've jumped through all sorts of hoops for this friend, gladly satisfying any requests for money, and been unstinting with my time and efforts in this regard. But even in such cases, there are times when one is taken advantage of. For example, if one were horribly taken advantage of by a person one has believed in completely, wouldn't that experience lead one to a lifestyle with an other people are enemies outlook? Philosopher, it seems that you have not yet gained an understanding of the goal of confidence. Suppose, for example, that you are in a love relationship, but you are having doubts about your partner. And you think to yourself, I'll bet she's cheating on me. And you start making desperate efforts in search of evidence to prove that. What do you think would happen as a result? Youth. Well, I guess that would depend on the situation. Philosopher. No, in every instance you will find an abundance of evidence that she has been cheating on you. Wait, why is that? Your partner's casual remarks, her tone when talking to someone on the phone, the times when you can't reach her, as long as you are looking with doubt in your eyes, everything around you will appear to be evidence that she is cheating on you, even if she is not. Youth. Philosopher. Right now, you are only concerned about the times you were taken advantage of and nothing else. You focus only on the pain from the wounds you sustained on such occasions. But if you are afraid to have confidence in others in the long run, you will not be able to build deep relationships with anyone. Youth. Well, I see what you're getting at. The main objective, which is to build deep relationships, But still, being taken advantage of is scary, and that's the reality, isn't it? Philosopher. If it is a shallow relationship, when it falls apart, the pain will be slight, and the joy that relationship brings each day will also be slight. It is precisely because one can gain the courage to enter into deeper relationships by having confidence in others that the joy of one's interpersonal relations can grow, and one's joy in life can grow too. Youth. No, that's not what I was talking about. You're changing the subject again. The courage to overcome the fear of being taken advantage of. Where does it come from? Philosopher. It comes from self-acceptance. If one can simply accept oneself as one is, and ascertain what one can do and what one cannot, one becomes able to understand that taking advantage is the other person's task, and getting to the core of confidence in others becomes less difficult. Youth. You're saying that taking advantage of someone is the other person's task, and one can't do anything about it? That I should be resigned in an affirmative way? Your arguments always ignore our emotions. What does one do about all the anger and sadness one feels when one is taken advantage of? Philosopher. When one is sad, one should be sad to one's heart's content. It is precisely when one tries to escape the pain and sadness that one gets stuck and ceases to be able to build deep relationships with anyone. Think about it this way. We can believe and we can doubt, but we are aspiring to see others as our comrades. To believe or to doubt, the choice should be clear. The essence of work is a contribution to the common good. Youth. All right. Well, suppose I've managed to attain self-acceptance, and that I have attained confidence in others too. What kind of changes would there be in me, then? Philosopher. First, one accepts one's irreplaceable this me just as it is. That is self-acceptance. Then one places unconditional confidence in other people. That is confidence in others. You can accept yourself, and you can have confidence in others. So, what are other people to you now? My comrades? Exactly. In effect, placing confidence in others is connected to seeing others as comrades. It is because they are one's comrades that one can have confidence in them. If they were not one's comrades, one would not be able to reach the level of confidence. And then having other people as one's comrades connects to finding refuge in the community one belongs to. So, one can gain the sense of belonging that it's okay to be here. Youth. In other words, you're saying that to feel it's okay to be here, one has to see others as comrades, and that to see others as comrades, one needs both self-acceptance and confidence in others. Philosopher. That's right. You are grasping this more quickly now. To take it a step farther, one may say that people who think of others as enemies have not attained self-acceptance and do not have enough confidence in others. Youth. All right. It is true that people seek the sense of belonging that it's okay to be here, and to get that, they need self-acceptance and confidence in others. I have no objection to that. But I don't know. Can one really gain a sense of belonging just by seeing others as comrades and having confidence in them? Philosopher. Of course, community feeling is not something that is attainable with just self-acceptance and confidence in others. It is at this point that the third key concept, contribution to others, becomes necessary. Contribution to others? Philosopher. Is to act in some way on one's comrades. To attempt to contribute. That is contribution to others. Youth. So when you say contribute, you mean to show a spirit of self-sacrifice and to be of service to those around you. Philosopher. Contribution to others does not connote self-sacrifice. Adler goes so far as to warn that those who sacrifice their own lives for others are people who have conformed to society too much. And please do not forget, We are truly aware of our own worth only when we feel that our existence and behavior are beneficial to the community. That is to say, when one feels, I am of use to someone. Do you remember this? In other words, contribution to others, rather than being about getting rid of the I and being of service to someone, is actually something one does in order to be truly aware of the worth of the I. Youth, contributing to others is for oneself? Philosopher, yes. There is no need to sacrifice the self. Uh-oh, your argument is starting to crumble here, isn't it? You've done a wonderful job of digging your own grave. In order to satisfy the I, one makes oneself of service to others. Isn't that the very definition of hypocrisy? I said it before. Your entire argument is hypocritical. It's a slippery argument. Look, I would rather believe in the villain who is honest about his desires than the good guy who tells a pack of lies. Philosopher, those are a lot of hasty conclusions. You do not understand community feeling yet. Youth, then I wish you would provide concrete examples of what you consider to be contribution to others. Philosopher, the most easily understood contribution to others is probably work. To be in society and join the workforce, or to do the work of taking care of one's household. Labour is not a means of earning money. It is through labour that one makes contributions to others and commits to one's community, and that one truly feels, I am of use to someone, and even comes to accept one's existential worth. Youth. You are saying that the essence of work is contribution to others? Philosopher. Making money is a major factor too, of course. It is something akin to that Dostoevsky quote you happened upon. Money is coined freedom. But there are people who have so much money that they could never use it all. And many of these people are continually busy with their work. Why do they work? Are they driven by boundless greed? No, they work so they are able to contribute to others, and also to confirm their sense of belonging, their feeling that it's okay to be here. Wealthy people who, on having amassed a great fortune, focus their energies on charitable activities, are doing so in order to attain a sense of their own worth and confirm for themselves that it's okay to be here. Youth. I suppose that is one truth. But what? Self-acceptance, accepting one's irreplaceable this me, just as it is. Confidence in others, to place unconditional confidence at the base of one's interpersonal relations, rather than seeding doubt. The young man found these two concepts sufficiently convincing. Contribution to others, however, was something he could not quite grasp. If that contribution is supposed to be for other people, then it would have to be one of bitter self-sacrifice. On the other hand, if that contribution is actually for oneself, then it's the height of hypocrisy. This point has to be made utterly clear. In a resolute tone of voice, the young man continued. Young people walk ahead of adults. Youth. I will acknowledge that work has aspects of contribution to others, but the logic that says that officially one is contributing to others when, in actuality, one is doing it for oneself is nothing other than hypocrisy. How do you explain that? Philosopher, imagine the following kind of scene. It's after dinner at home, and there are still dishes left on the table. The children have gone off to their rooms, and the husband is sitting on the sofa watching television. It's been left to the wife, me, to do the dishes and clear everything up. To make matters worse, the family takes that for granted, and they don't make the slightest effort to help. In such a situation, normally one would think, why won't they give me a hand? Or, why do I have to do all the work? Even if I do not hear the words, thank you, from my family while I'm cleaning up, I want them to think that I am of use to the family. Instead of thinking about what others can do for me, I want to think about and put into practice what I can do for other people. Just by having that feeling of contribution, the reality right in front of me will take on a completely different hue. In fact, if I am grumbling to myself as I wash the dishes, I am probably not much fun to be around, so everyone just wants to keep their distance. On the other hand, if I'm humming away to myself and washing the dishes in good spirits, the children might come and give me a hand. At the very least, I'd be creating an atmosphere in which it is easier for them to offer their help. Youth. Well, that might be the case in that setting anyway. Philosopher. Now, how come I have a feeling of contribution in that setting? I have it because I am able to think of the members of my family as comrades. If I cannot do that, inevitably, there will be thoughts running through my head like, why am I the only one doing this? And why won't anyone give me a hand? Contribution that is carried out while one is seeing other people as enemies may indeed lead to hypocrisy. But if other people are one's comrades, that should never happen, regardless of the contributions one makes. You have been fixating on the word hypocrisy because you do not understand community feeling yet. Okay. For the sake of convenience, up to this point I have discussed self-acceptance, confidence in others, and contribution to others in that order. However, these three are linked as an indispensable whole in a sort of circular structure. It is because one accepts oneself just as one is, one self-accepts, that one can have confidence in others without the fear of being taken advantage of. And it is because one can place unconditional confidence in others and feel that people are one's comrades that one can engage in contribution to others. Further, it is because one contributes to others that one can have the deep awareness that I am of use to someone and accept oneself just as one is. One can self-accept. The notes you took down the other day, do you have them with you? Youth. Oh, you mean that note on the objectives put forward by Adlerian psychology? I've kept it on me ever since that day, of course. Here it is. The two objectives for behavior, to be self-reliant and to live in harmony with society. The two objectives for the psychology that supports these behaviors, the consciousness that I have the ability and the consciousness that people are my comrades. Philosopher. If you overlap the content of this note with what we have just been discussing, you should be able to gain a deeper understanding. In other words, to be self-reliant, and the consciousness that I have the ability corresponds to our discussion of self-acceptance. And then, to live in harmony with society, and the consciousness that people are my comrades, connects to confidence in others, and then to contribution to others. Youth. I see. So the objective of life is community feeling. I think it will be some time before I can get this clear in my head, though. Philosopher. Yes, it probably will. As Adler himself said, understanding a human being is no easy matter. Of all the forms of psychology, individual psychology is probably the most difficult to learn and put into practice. Youth. That's exactly right. Even if the theories are convincing, it's hard to put them into practice. Philosopher. It is even said that to truly understand Adlerian psychology and apply it to actually changing one's way of living, one needs half the number of years one has lived. In other words, if you were to start studying at the age of 40, it would take another 20 years until you turned 60. If you were to start studying at the age of 20, it would take 10 years until you turned 30. You are still young. Starting at such an early stage in life means that you might be able to change more quickly. In the sense that you can change quickly, you are walking ahead of the adults of the world. To go about changing yourself and making a new world, in a way, you are ahead of me too. It is okay to lose your way or lose focus. Do not be dependent on vertical relationships or be afraid of being disliked, and just make your way forward freely. If all the adults could see that young people were walking ahead of them, I am sure the world would change dramatically. Youth. I am walking ahead of you? Philosopher. You certainly are. We walk on the same ground, and you are moving on ahead of me. Ha ha! You're the first person I've ever met who would say such a thing to someone young enough to be his son. I would like more and more young people to learn about Adler's thought. And I would like more adults to learn about it too, because people can change, regardless of their ages. Workaholism is a life lie. Youth. All right. I readily admit that I do not have the courage to take steps towards self-acceptance or confidence in others. But is this really only the fault of the I? Isn't it also actually a problem brought about by other people who accuse me unreasonably and attack me? Philosopher. To be sure, not everyone in the world is a good and virtuous person. One goes through any number of unpleasant experiences in one's interpersonal relations. But there is something one must not get wrong at this juncture. The fact that, in every instance, it is that person who attacks you who has the problem. And it is certainly not the case that everyone is bad. People with neurotic lifestyles tend to sprinkle their speech with such words as everyone, and always, and everything. Everyone hates me, they will say, or it's always me who takes a loss, or everything is wrong. If you think you might be in the habit of using such generalizing statements, you should be careful. Youth. Well, that does sound rather familiar. In Adlerian psychology, we think of this as a way of living that is lacking in harmony of life. It is a way of living in which one sees only a part of things but judges the whole. Harmony of life. In the teachings of Judaism, one finds the following anecdote. If there are 10 people, one will be someone who criticizes you no matter what you do. This person will come to dislike you, and you will not learn to like him either. Then there will be 2 others who accept everything about you, and whom you accept too, and you will become close friends with them. The remaining 7 people will be neither of these types. Now, do you focus on the one person who dislikes you? Do you pay more attention to the 2 who love you? Or would you focus on the crowd, the other 7? A person who is lacking in harmony of life will see only the one person he dislikes, and will make a judgment of the world from that. Intriguing. Some time ago, I participated in a workshop for stammer sufferers and their families. Do you know anyone who has a stammer? Youth. Yes. There was a student at the school I went to who stuttered. That must be hard to deal with, both for the person who has it and for his family, too. Philosopher. Why is stammering hard to deal with? The view in Adlerian psychology is that people who suffer from stammering are concerned only about their own way of speaking, and they have feelings of inferiority, and see their lives as unbearably hard, and they become too self-conscious as a result, and start tripping over their words more and more. Youth. They are concerned only about their own way of speaking? That's right. There are not many people who will laugh at or make fun of someone when he trips over his words now and then. To use the example I just mentioned, it would probably be no more than 1 person in 10 at most. In any case, with the sort of foolish person who would take such an attitude, it is best to simply sever the relationship. But if one is lacking in harmony of life, one will focus only on that person and end up thinking, everyone is laughing at me. Youth. Well, that's just human nature. Philosopher. I have a reading group that meets on a regular basis, and one of the participants has a stammer. It comes out sometimes when it's his turn to read, but not a single person there is the sort who would laugh at him for that. Everyone just sits quietly and waits in a quite natural way for the next words to come out. I am sure this is not a phenomenon that is isolated to my reading group. When one's interpersonal relations do not go well, it cannot be blamed on a stammer or a fear of blushing or anything of the sort. Even though the problem is really that one has not attained self-acceptance or confidence in others, or contribution to others for that matter, One is focusing on only one tiny part of things that simply should not matter, and from that trying to form judgments with regard to the entire world. This is a misguided lifestyle that is lacking in harmony of life. Youth. Did you actually convey such a harsh idea to people who suffer from stammering? Philosopher. Of course. At first, there were some adverse reactions. But by the end of the 3-day workshop, everyone was in deep agreement with it. Youth. It certainly is a fascinating argument, but focusing on people who suffer from stammering seems like a rather special example. Could you give me others? Philosopher. Well, another would be the workaholic. This, too, is an example of a person who is clearly lacking in harmony of life. A workaholic is. Why is that? People who suffer from stammering are looking at only a part of things, but judging the whole. With workaholics, the focus is solely on one specific aspect of life. They probably tried to justify that by saying, "It's busy at work, so I don't have enough time to think about my family." But this is a life lie. They are simply trying to avoid their other responsibilities by using work as an excuse. One ought to concern oneself with everything from household chores and child-rearing to one's friendships and hobbies and so on. Adler does not recognize ways of living in which certain aspects are unusually dominant. Youth. Ah, that's exactly the sort of person my father was. It was just, be a workaholic, bury yourself in your work and produce results, and then rule over the family on the grounds that you are the breadwinner. He was a very feudalistic person. Philosopher. In a sense, that is a way of living, of refusing to acknowledge one's life tasks. Work does not mean having a job at a company. Work in the home, child-rearing, contributing to the local society, hobbies and all manner of other things are work. Companies and such are just one small part of that. A way of living that acknowledges only company work is one that is lacking in harmony of life. Youth. It's exactly as you say, and it's not as if the family he's supporting has any say in the matter either. You can't argue with your father when he growls with a violent tone of voice. It's thanks to me that there's food on the table. Philosopher. Such a father has probably been able to recognize his own worth only on the level of acts. He works all those hours, brings in enough money to support a family, and is recognized by society, and on that basis he views himself as having greater worth than the other members of his family. For each and every one of us, however, there comes a time when one can no longer serve as the provider, when one gets older and reaches retirement age. For example, one may have no choice but to live off one's pension or support from one's children. Even when one is young, injury or poor health can lead to not being able to work any longer. On such occasions, those who can accept themselves only on the level of acts are severely damaged. Youth. You mean those people whose lifestyle is all about work? Yes. People whose lives lack harmony. Youth. In that case, I think I'm starting to get what you mean by the level of being which you brought up last time. And I certainly haven't given much thought to the fact that someday I won't be able to work any longer or do anything on the level of acts. Philosopher. Does one accept oneself on the level of acts or on the level of being? This is truly a question that relates to the courage to be happy. You can be happy now. Youth. The courage to be happy. Well, let's hear what kind of courage that should be. Philosopher. Yes, that is an important point. Youth. You say that all problems are interpersonal relationship problems, and then you turn that around and say that our happiness is to be found in our interpersonal relations too. But I still find these aspects hard to accept. Is what human beings call happiness merely something within our good interpersonal relations? That is to say, Do our lives exist for such minuscule repose and joy? Philosopher, I have a good idea of the issues you are grappling with. The first time I attended a lecture on Adlerian psychology, the lecturer, Oscar Christensen, who was a disciple of one of Adler's disciples, made the following statement. Those who hear my talk today can be happy right now, this very instant, but those who do not will never be able to be happy. Youth. Wow, that's straight from the mouth of a con man. You're not telling me you fell for that, are you? What is happiness to human beings? This is a subject that has been one of the consistent threads of philosophy since ancient times. I had always regarded psychology as nothing more than a field of philosophy, and, as such, had very little interest in psychology as a whole. So it was as a student of philosophy that I had concerned myself, in my own way, with the question, what is happiness? I would be remiss if I did not admit to having felt some reluctance on hearing Christensen's words. However, at the same time that I experienced that reluctance, I realized something. I had given much deep thought to the true character of happiness. I had searched for answers, but I had not always given deep thought to the question, how can one be happy? It occurred to me then that even though I was a student of philosophy, maybe I wasn't happy. I see. So your first encounter with Adlerian psychology began with a feeling of incongruity. That's right. Then please tell me, did you eventually become happy? Of course. How can you be so sure? For a human being, the greatest unhappiness is not being able to like oneself. Adler came up with an extremely simple answer to address this reality, namely, that the feeling of I am beneficial to the community, or I am of use to someone, is the only thing that can give one a true awareness that one has worth. Do you mean the contribution to others you mentioned earlier? Yes. And this is an important point. When we speak of contribution to others, it doesn't matter if the contribution is not a visible one. Youth. It doesn't matter if the contribution is not a visible one. Philosopher. You are not the one who decides if your contributions are of use. That is the task of other people, and is not an issue in which you can intervene. In principle, there is not even any way you can know whether you have really made a contribution. That is to say, when we are engaging in this contribution to others, the contribution does not have to be a visible one. All we need is the subjective sense that I am of use to someone, or, in other words, a feeling of contribution. Wait a minute, if that's the case, then what you are calling happiness is... Do you see it now? In a word, happiness is the feeling of contribution. That is the definition of happiness. But that's... Is something wrong? There's no way I can accept such a simplistic definition. Look, I'm not forgetting what you told me before. You said, though on the level of acts one might not be of use to anyone, on the level of being every person is of use. But if that's the case, according to your logic, all human beings would be happy.